research analyst with the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, an environmental health and justice organization in New Orleans, Louisiana. She maintains and operates both the Refinery Accident Database, a tool tracking petrochemical accidents across the state, and the Eyewitness Pollution Map, a crowdsourced pollution tracking tool. She holds a BS in environmental geology from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and has a background in community-based research and environmental and public health impact of extraction industry.
Hi, thank you guys all for coming. Today, like Beth said, I work for the Louisiana Bucket Brigade, which is an environmental organization located in the city. Our mission is to support fence line communities around oil refineries across the state, and so I'm going to talk a little today about some of the tools that we use. Oh, I don't have any relationships. So as you may or may not know, Louisiana has a lot of petrochemical activity. And in particular, we have a lot of oil refineries. So we've got 17 across the state here where they're located, and you can see that they're really densely clustered between where we are right now in New Orleans and up the river in Baton Rouge. So we've got, it's called the, you know, Cancer Alley. It's the chemical corridor. There's lots of refining, lots of other chemical plants. We also have some of the largest refineries in the country. So this is a list of the top 10 oil refineries by refining capacity, and you can see that we've got 3 out of the top 10 in Louisiana. So Marathon Petroleum in Garyville, ExxonMobil in Baton Rouge, and Citgo Petroleum in Lake Charles. And we used to be higher up, but Texas keeps expanding their oil refineries, so we got bumped down a little bit. But if you look at just these 3 oil refineries alone, they're refining almost 1.5 million barrels a day of oil, which is just a huge amount of oil. So like I said, we work to support fence line communities, and I wanted to talk a little bit about what that means. It's pretty intuitive, right? So I just wanted to make the point that when we're talking about fence line communities, we really mean that people are right at the fence of these facilities. People live very close to these oil refineries, and that means that they impact their day-to-day lives really heavily. So to further illustrate that point, this is an overhead view of ExxonMobil in Baton Rouge that you'll remember from a couple slides ago is one of the largest in the country. And I just wanted to show this to illustrate the size of the facility itself. It's really large, but also how close people live. So if you look on the very right-hand side of the screen, you'll see how close those streets are to the facility itself. That's the community of Standard Heights that we've been working with for a number of years. And they, again, they're, you know, within feet of the fence line of the facility. Another point is that often communities are not only impacted by one refinery or industry. So with the Standard Heights example, they've got Exxon on this side of them. They have another chemical plant north of them, another below, and then they have a rail yard on the other side. So they're really surrounded by industry, and that's true of many of the communities that we work with. Another point on this slide is I wanted to talk a bit about the history of ExxonMobil and of many of the refineries in the state. So it wasn't Exxon when it was built, but when this facility was built in 1919, it was built on a former cotton plantation. So because of proximity to the Mississippi River, there's a lot of transitioning between plantation economy to extractive industries, and those facilities are located in exactly the same place. So again, looking at disproportionate impact of these industries, these are a few of the refineries that we work with, and again, the communities that live closest to the facilities who are really getting hit with the pollution that's coming from the facilities are disproportionately African American and disproportionately low income. So if you look at ExxonMobil, which is the facility that we were just looking at, when you look at percentage of the population living below the poverty line within a mile of the facility, it's 3 times what that same metric is for the parish. And then if you look at percentage African American living closest to the plant, it's more than double the percentage for the parish. And you can see that doesn't hold in every case, but it certainly is the predominant trend that we see. So our work would be a lot different if these refineries were operating perfectly and very well maintained, but we find that that is not the case. This is from 2013 data, but refineries in Louisiana have an average of 6 accidents every single week. And you can see some of the images of flaring, of smoke, of that one that's kind of buried in the top is an explosion that killed a worker a few years ago. So we see a lot of these accidents in Louisiana. And I should say, too, that this is probably a pretty significant underestimate because this data is coming from industry self-reports of pollution. So we always compare it to if you were driving in your car and the police asked you to just call them up every time that you were speeding, probably we're not going to get a super accurate picture of how many times people are going over the speed limit. So this number is probably pretty low. So accidents cause a huge spike in emissions from the plant. They often can release tens of thousands of pounds of pollution at a time. And this is some data from 2005 to 2011 from all refineries across the state. And you can see the amounts that we're releasing and the type of compounds. And luckily, I'm in a room full of public health folks, so you guys know what some of these things can do. But, you know, we see a lot of sulfur compounds. We see a lot of volatile organic compounds. And many of these things are linked to really severe health impacts. And again, this data that you're looking at is just from self-reported accident data. So remember that it's likely an underestimate, and it also doesn't include things like permitted emissions that the facility is allowed to release, or any that, you know, any releases from valves and things like that they're not tracking. Kind of transitioning into some of the tools that we use. Refineries are required to submit an accident report to the state of Louisiana whenever they have an accident that releases emission in excess of their permit limit and of something called reportable quantity. So this is an example of what this notification looks like. It's called an unauthorized discharge form. It's usually on letterhead. It tells talks a little bit about the accident, how much was released, just a lot of information about what happened. And the state of Louisiana maintains a system making these documents publicly available. However, it's really difficult to use, especially if you're not used to looking at really technical documents or, you know, refining, if you're not well-versed in refining processes. So, a few of the shortcomings, there are often multiple reports for a single accident. Their system doesn't correlate or combine those reports. You usually have to know an accident incident number, which is just a randomly generated number, so you wouldn't be able to necessarily search by date. It's really clunky. It's really difficult to use. Because their system is not our favorite, we at LAB maintain something called the Refinery Accident Database. And what we do is we take those reports that are submitted to the states, we download them quarterly, and then we input them into our own system, which is available at that URL publicly online. You can go and look at it now. And so what we do is we read through every single accident report. Well, we have really dedicated interns who read through every single accident report, and they input a variety of information about the accident. So you can see an individual report from a refinery there on the right. It has information about when the accident took place, what was released, what caused the accident, whether or not there was any remedial action by the plant, all kinds of information. We also take all of the reports about the particular incident and we put them together, upload them as a PDF, so if you're interested in looking at those documents, you can. So we've been doing this work since 2005, so we're coming up on our 10th year of data, and it's just a really rich resource. We've got more stuff than we can do, than we can really look at. There's a lot there, so it's an incredible resource, not only for us, for communities that we work with, but also for researchers and public health folks like yourselves. So this is looking at one of the home pages, just to illustrate the point that you can see by facility, the number of accidents per year, and the total pollution. So this is just to illustrate the point that you would never be able to see this kind of long-term data trends or look at any sort of any kind of long-term indicators with the state system. So that's that, and the fact that it's really publicly accessible are the things that we think make our system so great. So having this data allows Bucket Brigade to be able to really keep tabs on refinery accidents in Louisiana. So I wanted to, we do a lot of analysis with this data. I wanted to highlight one bit of work that we've been doing, which is looking at accidents by unit. And the idea with this work is that, okay, if particular facilities continually have problems within one unit, that probably means that they're not addressing that. And maybe that's an area that we need to target. So we just started doing this work a few months ago, and what we found, this is at Calumet in Shreveport, we found that over half of all accidents were related to either the tank farm, which is where chemicals are stored, or with the sulfur recovery unit, which is another big unit in the plant. So that was really interesting, and we didn't know that before looking at the data in this way. And then our next question was, okay, they keep having problems within these two units. Are they ongoing? Do we still see those problems now? So we looked at the number of accidents involving the units over time, and what we saw was that with the sulfur recovery unit, we were kind of seeing consistent accidents, and then it really dropped off in 2012. However, with the tank farm, we see a pretty strong uptick in 2013. So, you know, that tells us that that's an area that we should probably be doing some advocacy around. Another bit of information that we were able to get looking at this data is about flaring at that same facility. So flaring is when in oil refining they have an excess of product, they need to get rid of it, rather than just venting it straight to the atmosphere, they burn it, and the idea is that it will combust and the pollution will be burned. It doesn't always happen that way. And in this case, where you see the black smoke, that's an indication that the flare is operating improperly. So we have been working with a community member in Shreveport who had told us about the number two flare for a long time and had been reporting to the state about that flare. And we knew that the flare was permitted to only release 0.01 pounds per hour of sulfur dioxide. When we started looking at the accident reports related to this flare, we found that it was often releasing far, far above that. So we were seeing 60 and 70 pounds per hour versus a tenth of a pound. So and this is from a report that we just put together. I've got some copies in the back, but my point with this is just that having this data, looking through every single accident report, allows us to see these consistent accidents at facilities that then we can really take to regulators and kind of format in a way that they'll look at. We also advocate for federal policy change at Bucket Brigade, and this is some work from Anna Rybick, from a few years ago, looking at, again, flaring efficiency, and she found using our database information that emissions from flares were huge in Louisiana. So we've been really active with the EPA's refinery rule that they just put out a few months ago, and that data was really helpful in that. So we were able to see what areas needed to be targeted from a regulation standpoint and able to do some advocacy around that. And again, our mission at Bucket Brigade is primarily to inform communities and to empower them through data. So we always put together reports and fact sheets for community members so that they can know what's going on and they can take action on pollution in their neighborhood. That slide didn't get in there. Oh, okay, there we go. So transitioning to the next tool, refineries, whenever they have accidents, they're required to say if there was an offsite impact. And I have looked at a lot of these reports, and they have never said that there's been any offsite impact, which is a little absurd because pollution doesn't stop at the fence line. But the state and the regulatory agencies tend to really defer to what industry is saying about this, so we wanted a tool to try to capture that offsite impact that we know is happening. So we developed something called the Eyewitness Pollution Map, which is another publicly available online tool. That's the URL right there. I encourage you all to check it out. And what the pollution map is a crowdsourced pollution tracking tool. So the way that it works is that community members, or anyone, you guys could do it if you smell a funky smell while you're here in New Orleans, which would not surprise me. Community members are able to call, text, or email reports of pollution into our map. And then we take those reports, we verify them, we give them a series of tags, and then we upload them into the system. So you can see those red dots there are clusters of reports, and as you zoom in, it would kind of separate out, and you'd be able to see where they are. So again, community members report, we tell them to report every time that they see, smell, hear, or feel pollution. So usually we get a lot of odor complaints, you know, things smelling like sulfur, but this is the picture on the bottom there is from a flare at the Norco refinery, which is pretty close to where we are now from a few weeks ago. So a lot of times people will see the flares and report that. And we ask when folks make reports that they include a description of the event, the location where they are or where they were when they felt the pollution, any associated health impacts that they or their family member felt, wind direction, which is kind of tricky. We don't usually get wind direction, but we ask for wind direction, and then any photos or videos that they have of the event. We also include in the map facility self-reports to the National Response Center, which is their first point of contact after an accident. So we're able to kind of look at the disparities between facility reporting and community member reporting. So there are some systems that exist outside of Backup Brigade for community members to be able to report this pollution, one of which is maintained by the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. However, this is from a few weeks ago. This system is only accepting complaints between 9 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday. So if you're exposed to chemical pollution, make sure that it's between those hours. Otherwise, DEQ is not going to take your call. So this kind of illustrates the point, right? Community members need to be able to report this pollution when it happens. It often happens in the middle of the night, in the early morning, and Another issue with this system is that you would be able to get this information, but you'd have to request it. You'd have to FOIA it. So our site is online, available for everyone, so that's another advantage to our site. So this is a little schematic of how we use the reports, and I'm going to really breeze through it, but we use them for a variety of things. The first responder section, so community reports are often our first bit of information of when an accident has happened, especially with refineries that are a little bit further away that we're not so close to. We also have been involved with incident command with the Coast Guard in response to these accidents, so it's helped inform that kind of first response. Community engagement, the reports are really a really great catalyst for community organizing. In a lot of instances, we'll go out to communities. Oh, okay. I'm going to speed up. It's a good opportunity for people to see that it's not just their problem. We also use them in enforcement. We communicate them to folks at different regulatory agencies. So some benefits of the map. Reporting is narrative, and it validates community members' experiences, which is especially important in Louisiana because often industry and the state consistently say that there's no problem. It also collects data on real health, public health impact of this pollution, which is, to my knowledge, not collected in any other way. And it also facilitates media reporting, kind of shifts the narrative in the media. A lot of times when you are talking about an accident, if a community member is interviewed, it's, you know, a little blip at the end. But as you can see, our reports are often incorporated in news articles. And again, it documents a problem. We've got 13,000 reports to the site to date, and it allows community members to track their own experiences, and it again counters the narrative that problems have been resolved. And I'm not going to go into St. Rose stuff too much. This is a community that we've worked with. Somebody from St. Rose will be presenting tomorrow morning if you're interested, but this graph just shows reports from St. Rose over time. And if you look back, that date is July 9th, and that was the date that the EPA sent us a letter saying that the odor problems and the pollution had stopped in the community. So the only way that we were able to say that that wasn't true was because we had community members reporting and they continued to report. So really quickly, we correlate all of this data. We combine our database information with our eyewitness pollution map reports, and we send those to folks at the state and the EPA to try to create enforcement opportunities around this accident. And I just wanted to have a slide. Obviously, we work with an incredible network of activists and community organizations in Louisiana and across the country, so this is a list if you're interested in looking at any of their work.
So one, I think you could get one question.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, we work really closely with a broad network. We just had a conference the past 2 days with many of those folks from Richmond and from Texas, where we get together. So I didn't talk about the bucket, but we obviously have the bucket, which is a low-cost air sampling device developed by folks at Global Community Monitor. So we've really collaborated with them, and we travel to conferences and keep in touch with all those folks too. Okay, thank you guys so much. Thank you.